Not everyone accepted the Rambam. In fact, today almost no one accepts the Rambam. But what he did was a fundamental change in the way we are learning halachot, and from the Rambam on, every shiur starts with the Rambam, because without the Rambam there would be no shiurim, right? So at least for that he was good. And Reb Chaim is built on the Rambam, so all the shiurim in the yeshivas are on the Rambam, although we don't paskin like him in many instances. But the basis has been changed because the mind of the Rambam was such that he saw that most people can't learn Shas and know what to do. And that's what he states in his introduction. He called it Mishneh Torah, right? The Yad HaChazakah was a later name. There wasn't a name that the Rambam applied to it. Yad is 14, because the Rambam is 14 books, so people called it a Yad HaChazakah. But really it's called Mishneh Torah. And the Rambam says, why did I call it Mishneh Torah? You learn the Torah, and you learn me. You skip everything in between, and you know what to do. You don't need to learn Daf Yoimi, you don't need to learn Tosfos. You just read the Chumash, and come to me, and then you know everything. Okay, so the idea was that you have to make things in a way that can be applicable. And therefore I think that the source of authority remains the poskim who really master all fields together, and they are built upon previous generations up to the apex, which is Matan Torah. Again, the diametric opposite view from science. Science is going down to become the apex of the most current one, whereas halakha is the basis today built upwards towards Matan Torah. So I think if we look at it this way, we can have some order in the way we want to conduct our lives, being both modern in a sense that we use and utilize what modern life can give us, but yet keep strictly according to halakha without any compromises, and we don't need to make compromises because we can really rely on authorities in both sides and know that there are different methodologies that lead to the same direction. Thank you.
Even though there is today, and not only today, generations ago, an approach in the Jewish society, and I'd like to have your insights on where it comes from, that for business, for a shidduch, for an operation, in the place, and it is very strange to see that even the Tanya has a famous chapter to say that he doesn't know where it comes from, but the whole Ha'elu, the Lord Adamu, that you ask questions like that. So I'd like to ask you, where does it come from? It's obviously not new. And two, how can that be faced, particularly with your clinical experience, if the family says you have first to ask their rabbi about it, and they have no idea. I experienced several cases that the rabbi was asked, and he was totally wrong. I think if that would be a case that he would not be a rabbi, I would actually attack him, and he'd be
right. Okay. I'll try not to be so aggressive, but I agree with the trend. Let me tell you about Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach concerning this issue. When people, I think the question is: should the rabbis or the rebbes interfere in scientific matters by giving a definite opinion on them? Right. In a nutshell. when Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was approached, he was approached many times by patients, should we do a CAT scan, shouldn't we do a CAT scan, should we operate, shouldn't we operate, medical questions. He never gave an answer on that. The only thing he said, if you're not sure, ask a second opinion. That is fine. And he had a list of people that he trusted, and he said, ask this and this if he knew, and if not, he said, find out who is an expert and ask him, which I think is very logical and okay. He said that he is not allowed to give a medical opinion, because the Shulchan Aruch says that whoever is not baki in refuah should not interfere in refuah. And obviously, he said, I am not a baki in refuah. What do I know in refuah? So I shouldn't say it. I'm not allowed to say it, because I am not an expert in refuah. So you have doubts. The fact that you came to ask me means that you have a doubt. Otherwise, if you're sure that this is the right way, you should do it. But you came to ask me, you have a doubt. You have a doubt, ask a second opinion. That's fine. And it should be done so, because second opinion is halachically required in dangerous situations. So that is according to halacha. But some of the questions seemed to be medical questions, but really they were halachic questions. And then he interfered. For instance, if a woman comes and says, I was diagnosed as having a baby with Down syndrome, what should I do about it? It sounds like a medical question. Should I abort or shouldn't I abort? Who does an abortion? A physician. So it's a medical question. Absolutely not. That's not a medical question. To abort or not to abort is a technical medical issue, which obviously only a physician does. But the question whether to abort or not is a halachic question. It has nothing to do with medicine. It is based on medical facts. But the decision is a halachic decision. So here, not only is Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach the one to say, but the physician is the one not to say anything. Who is he to say whether the woman should abort or not? That is not within his expertise. He can tell the woman, this baby has this and this defect, and if you don't know what it means, I'll explain to you what it means. But whether to abort or not is not his expertise. So the mixing of the authorities here in science are sometimes confused. If it is a question whether to do a CAT scan or not, not a rabbi's authority. He shouldn't interfere with at all. If it is a question whether to abort or not to abort, it's not a physician's question. It is a halachic question. And therefore, the authority comes to the rabbi. Now, I think what happened in recent years, and I a little disagree with your presentation, I think that in recent years it became more a problem than it was ever. And I think that, at least in Yerushalayim, I don't know in Toronto, but in Yerushalayim, it is hardly a day that someone comes for medical advice on a medical issue which has nothing to do with halacha, even if you extend halacha to the furthest degree. It has nothing to do with halacha, yet the decision whether to do it or not goes to the rabbi or to the rebbe. And that, in my humble view, is wrong from the rebbe's point of view, not from the patient. The patient is not in fault. I mean, he trusts his rebbe, he goes to his rebbe. The rebbe should tell him, I'll pray for you, I'll give tzedakah for you, or you give tzedakah, or go to a second opinion. But whether to do it or not to do, he shouldn't interfere. That's point number one. Point number two, again from Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, if he had to decide, when he decided that it is not a medical question, but it involves a halachic decision, he never relied on the report of the family or the patient on what they have. It is almost always wrong. Patients, lay people, understand some, misunderstand some, don't know exactly what it means. It's really, you can't build on it. It is a very partial information. When he had to decide, he would call the physician, who is responsible for this particular patient and get from him the information in order to make his psak. Again, I think very few poskim who deal with halachic matters, I'm not talking about those who are dealing with medical matters that they shouldn't deal in the first place, but those who deal with the halachic aspects of it, very few of them contact the physicians and get information from the first source. They usually rely on what the person is telling them. Personally, when I encounter a situation where my patient, I tell him to do something, and he comes back and he says no. He asked his rebbe or his rabbi, and he said no. I don't take it for an answer. I usually ask him, who is your rebbe or who is your rabbi? I ask his permission, and I speak directly. And I don't know statistically, but I would say 90% of cases, the decision is changed. Because the facts are different, and therefore, the decision is different. I didn't understand it, I didn't know that this is what you mean, I didn't know that this is the diagnosis. I mean, they understand, they know, but they got the wrong facts. And therefore, if you, as a physician, feel that this is the right thing for your patient, I think it's still your obligation not to take his no for an answer, but see if you can change it from his perspective, not against him, not against autonomy. That's his autonomy. But the autonomy is wrong. It's a heteronomy in Kantian expression. And therefore, I think that things have to be changed. In Yerushalayim, there was a Rebbetzin who gave, I won't mention her name, whoever knows, knows, that people used to go to her, and she gave medical advices, including, and she was a very prominent lady, and she was very busy. When you came to her, she always had two telephones, and at once she would answer to two patients what to do and what not to do. I mean, she was very busy. And one of her fears, I guess from a mishappening, and it became a fear, was against LP, lumbar puncture. If a child, or an adult for this matter, but I am a pediatric neurologist, if a child comes with a suspected meningitis, what you must do is do a lumbar puncture, get some fluid, and see whether the kid has meningitis or not. That was considered in Yerushalayim for many years a very dangerous procedure. In some circles it was considered an experimental procedure that the physicians just experiment on the children, and really it's not needed and it's dangerous, and she would tell everyone disagree to do a lumbar puncture. And that is a dangerous decision, because a child with meningitis can die if you don't diagnose him correctly. And if he doesn't die, it can be even worse. He will be very defective if he survives. So this is a procedure that you must do. It's not experimental, it's not dangerous, it's much more dangerous not to do it. I mean, it didn't make any sense. So I went to her, and I explained it to her. I felt that she had bad experience. I don't know what happened. Maybe years ago it was difficult to do, maybe sometime someone had a complication out of it, I don't know. She wouldn't believe me that this is a routine exam without any complications, and it's very needed. It took me several times to come to her until she finally agreed, and now she's not telling anymore not to do it. But many children, we had a major dilemma. What do you do with a child that is a suspected meningitis? You can't treat him the way he is, and the parents don't consent for a test. It's a very difficult dilemma from an ethical point of view and from a medical point of view what to do. And here, it's not even a rabbi, it's not even a rebbe, it's a rebbetzin. And still, that was... Huh? Yeah. So, just to exemplify your question, so I think the answer to your question is that if it's a medical matter, it shouldn't be ruled by rabbis. If it is a halachic matter, it shouldn't be ruled by physicians. And if you feel that you got an answer which doesn't make sense, try to speak to this rabbi. And many times I think you can succeed. Yes. Right. I'm not sure I understand how you frame your question, but...
Well, you said you wanted to prove that this was...
No, I said two things. I said that in principle, whatever is for the betterment of humankind, on the one hand, and it is not contradicting a specific halacha on the process of making it better, you should do it. Or you are obligated to do it if the chivshua is... a ruling, you have to do it, you have to conquer the world, you have to better the world according to the Rabban's interpretation. Now, if you take stem cells, for example, if your assumption is that this will do better to the world, this has to be the first assumption, and I think that at least currently everyone thinks that this is the trend, that stem cell research will lead to much better for the humankind. Therefore, in principle, you should do it. Now, the question is, in the process of doing it, are you violating any halachic ruling that will either stop you altogether from doing it or divert you to do it in one way and not in another way? You understand? Now, if you want to discuss stem cells, we discussed it in the afternoon. Stem cells from a halachic point of view, not from a Christian point of view, is permissible in principle. And if it is permissible, it is actually required. Because if there is nothing against doing it, and we know that it may lead to do good, then you should do it. You understand? Oh, I didn't understand your question. Well, if you take stem cell as an example and you want to discuss it, I really don't understand what your reservations are. If halachically taking a superfluous fertilized egg that is there to be thrown away, no one wants it anymore. Let's say that this is the situation. And instead of throwing it away, which you are permitted halachically, instead of throwing it away, you are researching on the stem cell of this particular fertilized egg with the notion that this research may, with a reasonable certainty, lead to do better to humankind. What are your reservations?
If.
Right. Every experiment is always if. But that's enough. I mean, nothing is 100% in the world. Everything is reasonable or non-reasonable. And at the moment, it is very reasonable. It is true that in the process of development, there might come up new issues that we don't know about now, and then we'll have to rediscuss it. But this doesn't mean that a priori you will prevent every research because maybe something bad will come out of it that you don't expect.
Well,
it's never a halachic consideration. Right. So this is a limitation from a halachic point of view. You're not allowed to create a priori a fertilized egg just for research, for halachic reasons, because the emission of the male reproductive part is not for reproduction. And that is called hashchatat zera. So you're not allowed to do it. Okay? So here you have a diversion of how to do it. Halacha tells you, stem cell, fine. You have two options to use. This is okay. This is not okay. That's exactly what I'm talking about. Yes. Well, I think you have said two things. One, you have said that there are opposing views amongst the rabbis themselves, which is nothing new, right? The second, you said that the medical information has changed the ethical or halachic decision. That is not in contradiction to what I have said. The decision is a halachic decision, but it must be based on medical facts. But the medical facts don't make the decision. In other words, the expert in the medical facts, which is the physician, shouldn't make a decision of DNR, because DNR is more than a medical decision. In other words, you have a patient who has three organ failure. He will die certainly within a period of time, but technically you can resuscitate him, and he can live another 5 days. Technically you can do it. Why don't you do it? You don't do it not because of medical considerations. You do it because of ethical or halachic considerations. Therefore, the final decision is not a medical decision. It is based on medical facts. And that's obvious. I try to explain at length that you cannot make an ethical or halachic decision without the facts. Good ethics start with good facts. That's the rule. Right. So that would be wrong. If he didn't use them, that was wrong. Because you can't make a halachic decision without knowing all the relevant facts. The facts in this case are medical facts, in other case they may be physical facts or chemical facts or business facts. Doesn't matter. Whatever you make a decision, it has to be based on the facts. And if a rabbi makes a decision on partial facts, or no facts, or on wrong facts, the halachic decision is invalid. It doesn't make any sense. So this doesn't change from what I said. The first part of your argument is obvious. I mean, not everyone agrees what the halachic decision should be based on the same facts. There is a difference of opinion, and that's legitimate. How do you deal with it? It's in a way no different than, let's say, judges. You go to one court and you get one decision. You go to another court with the same set of facts, you get a different decision, right? And it's not different from physicians. You go to one physician with the same facts and he gives you protocol A, and you go to another physician, you get protocol B. So what do you do? What do you do when you choose your physician? What do you do when you choose your judge? You choose one that you trust. So if it is a competent rabbi, aseh lecha rav, you go to him, and whatever he tells you, this is binding to you. It doesn't mean that it's universally right, and every rabbi has to agree to it. When I had questions, I went to Avshalom Zalman Auerbach. I was lucky. So he was my poisek, and I knew that there are other poskim who felt differently. It didn't change my way of conducting myself because I got a psak from a competent person. But there is a dispute, that's obvious. I mean, the Gemara is full of disputes. There are only disputes. There's not one sentence that someone didn't say the opposite, right? Yeah. Okay. I mean, there are variations to this question. I mean, it depends on how much risk you're talking, depends what the alternatives are, and so on. But let's say that someone has a significant illness and the treatment entails significant risk. So I think both from a medical point of view and from a halachic point of view, you should get a second opinion if this procedure that you are going to risk your life is the right decision. That is not a simple decision. So that is perfectly fine to get a second opinion. Now, if the two opinions agree, which is rarely so, because the physicians also like to show that they know better, right? So if you come with an opinion of A, he knows better and he'll give you a different answer because otherwise he will be the same as A. But take away the jokes. But let's say you got a second opinion. Okay? Now, are you allowed to risk your life with 30% chance in order to live 100%? This is not a medical decision. This is an ethical decision. And from our point of view, a halachic decision. So you should evaluate with a poisek if you're allowed in your particular, not your, if one is allowed in this particular condition to undertake such a degree of risk. It may be quality of life, it may be risk of life, it may be anything that is very significant. Because this is a halachic issue, because on the one hand, v'nishmartem me'od nafshotechem, you have to do everything to keep yourself as best as possible, but you're not allowed to kill yourself. So where are the borders? And again, if you go to different poskim, you'll get different statistics from a halachic point of view. Some say that you can take even 90% risk if it is chaye sha'a mul chaye olam. Chaye sha'a is defined as someone who is expected to live less than a year, and chaye olam is someone who will live more than a year. So if the condition is such that the person is going to die within a year, so all he has is chaye sha'a, and he wants to take any risk to live longer, even though taking the risk will shorten his life. He will live 10 months the way he is. If he takes the operation, he will die on the table now. He will shorten his life with 9 months. But if it succeeds, he'll live more than a year. What percentage of risk can he take? It's a halachic shaila. So some say he can take any risk, even 90% risk. Some say it has to be 50-50 at least. Some say only 30%, not beyond it. You're not allowed to take a risk that will kill you even within chaye sha'a if it's more than 30%. And there are sources to these debates. So again, it depends who you'll ask. Like it depends what physician you'll ask. But these are halachic issues, yes? Well, that's a good question.
And you do it.
This is a good question. In fact, I asked it several of the poskim. I didn't get a clear answer. In other words, let's say, DNR is only an example, but every real halachic shaila that is of significance, you have to perform it as a physician. The patient has to agree to it as a patient. So there are two persons who have to make the decision. And only if the two agree to this decision, the procedure will be done, right? Either DNR or no DNR or an operation or in vitro fertilization, whatever. Now you want to do what is right according to your principles. So you go and ask your rabbi. And he tells you one thing. The patient doesn't care for your rabbi. He wants to do what he thinks is right according to his rabbi. So he goes to his rabbi, and this rabbi says the opposite. And it's a dispute between the two rabbis. What do you do then? Are you obligated to do according to the patient as medical ethics today rules that the autonomy of the patient overrules the autonomy of the physician, although there is an autonomy to the physician, but it overrules, and you have a backing of a halachic decision because he comes with a halachic decision of his rov, or you are obligated to do what is right according to Aseh Lecha Rav. This is the psak that you got. You can't violate the psak that you got in favor of someone else that you don't know him. You don't know if he's reliable. You don't know if he understood the facts, and so on. And you can argue it for various ways. What do you do? I had a more general question in this sense. You know, Sha'aret Tzedek operates according to halacha as an institute. You can't come to Sha'aret Tzedek as a patient and say, I want abortion according to the law. In Sha'aret Tzedek, you won't get it because halachically you can't do it. So you have to go somewhere else to do it. Because the institute as such, not individual physicians. Individual physicians, some are religious, some are non-religious, some are non-Jews. But the institution as such goes according to halacha. Now let's say that there is an issue that is a policy issue. Let's say a DNR, not on a particular patient, but what are the rules? That's Sfirat HaOmer. let's say now Shaare Tzedek has its own poskim. There are poskim of Shaare Tzedek that paskin for Shaare Tzedek. Patients who are admitted to Shaare Tzedek are not necessarily obligated to take the psak of the poskim of Shaare Tzedek. They can have their own poskim. They are not they don't belong to Shaare Tzedek. They are private people who happened to be admitted to Shaare Tzedek. So now, if the policy of Shaare Tzedek based on the poskim of Shaare Tzedek is one way, and the patient comes with a psak of a very prominent rabbi who feels the opposite, should Shaare Tzedek as a policy accept this psak? Because it's a valid psak of a patient who happened to be here. It happened with the issue of brain death, for instance. The poskim of Shaare Tzedek are against brain death. But there are many patients, or families of patients, who are for it, and they want to donate organs. Can they donate an organ in Shaare Tzedek against the psak of the poskim of Shaare Tzedek? Because it's a legitimate claim that they got a psak that it's okay to do it. I don't know the answer to it. It's a debate going on all the time. We didn't solve it yet. We didn't solve it. I mean...
Last question, Dr. Jackson. Okay.
And along the same line as Margaret Thomas, what you've been talking about and the whole lecture and everything, that's the ideal situation. Even in the case where the rabbi of this one says one thing, the rabbi of the other one, that's also the ideal situation. Because they care from the ass. I think what's really being brought up by the question that this radio asked earlier is the real situation that we live in here. And you know, there are probably thousands of DNR orders written every day. Nobody asked any rabbi, nobody cares about rabbi. They didn't even ask the ethics committee in their hospital. It's just they got used to it because the patient was over 90 years old and they wrote a DNR order because for sure this patient couldn't have any quality of life. And nobody thought of it. And even in the worst situation that I ran into, I work in a, it's not even a hospital, it's a senior care, not residence, there's a, maybe halfway to a nursing home, not quite, it has nursing, some nursing on it. And they had a nursing director, and she told me, that the family tells her that they want a DNR, I should write a DNR, and not only does she, I should write, if I refuse, she'll write the DNR because the nursing director of Ontario says that she's allowed to and has to do it. I asked her, so first of all, I mean, this home is owned by a religious family, and I can understand how they could not operate according to Holocaust. And on top of that, I asked her, the whole situation was ludicrous because it wasn't a hospital. What do you mean? Do you mean that you're not going to start CPR? She says, of course we're going to start CPR. I said, then why are you going to try the DNR? You don't have anything for advanced life support. I mean, it's so ingrained that everybody can write a DNR that we don't, you know, if we could send all these people to attend days like this where they actually get the medical ethics idea into their system, it might be a little bit better. But it never reaches the stage, and then we end up with the confusion that we have today.
Well, I think you made a statement. I don't think it's a question. The fact is that some people don't do right things, but that's not new. I mean, it says lo tignov, and there are thieves in the world. What can we do? I mean, you have to teach lo tignov, and you know that there are thieves in the world. So the fact that you have to make a DNR decision not based on a physician's decision, but on an ethics decision, a physician can be part of it, or he can be the ethicist if he is qualified for it, but not as a physician. It is not a physician's decision. It is a societal decision, which can be either represented by a religious leader, or by an ethics committee, or by a physician who is an ethicist, or whatever. But it's not a physician that can make such decisions, because it's not a medical question. It is an ethical question or a halachic question from our perspective. Now, if physicians make such decisions lightly because that's what they think is right to do, they are doing something wrong, but that's not new. It's sad, but it's not new. Okay, thank you.
Really, I want to again express our heartfelt thanks to Dr. Steinberg, and you can come back hopefully next year. We can hear him again. So, or in Yerushalayim, you can go hear him all the time, I'm sure. And really, thank you, and have a good night. We will daven Maariv in a few minutes. There are refreshments. We'll go upstairs in the base medrash and daven Maariv.